This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
A quarter leaf moon in Scorpio. The moon is 22 days old. The synodic forecast says it's not a good time to sow anything in the garden, but should get going on the compost heap. So we have actually, with a waning moon, we want to hold off on planting stuff if you are a lunar type person. The biodynamic forecast, the moon is Scorpio, it's a water sign, and say the biodynamicists, a good time for leafy plants. Sidereal forecast, the moon is Scorpio, and they say that it's a good time to plant your seedlings. So that's it for both the conventional and the alternative forecasts. We're going to go straight into news from around Cascadia. Before we speak with our first guest, Ron Williams, on Oregon, with Oregon Action on the sequestration here effects here in Oregon, just a note, another police shooting, a man in the garage was shot, according to the report, because he had a gun. He was armed, so the police shot him. Well, that I'm sure that for most people in the around the areas, they say, well, that makes perfect sense. Fellow had a gun, so might as well take him out. Well, wait a minute here. If it's okay for the police to shoot everybody with guns in public areas, why didn't they just shoot all those people who were down at Salem the other day? Hundreds of people with guns. Why didn't they shoot the two guys walking around the neighborhoods? In fact, if we were taking into account the carry concealed laws, might as well just shoot anyone because there's a good chance of carrying a gun. So the police rationale for shooting the guy in the parking lot, that he had a gun, does seem to fall apart in light of the fact that pretty much everybody has a gun. And we have other news on the Columbia River crossing. That's an extraordinary boondoggle. Somehow, somewhere in long nights and back rooms, it turns out that Kitts Harbor's baby dream is going to come true and that there is going to be this bridge. Now, all they have to do is to persuade Washington. And lo and behold, Washington lawmakers seem to be coming around. Again, more of this, the long nights and the backroom deals. Very often when public hearings take place, you can actually sense ink drying on the agreements that have already been signed. We are going to speak now with Ron Williams at Oregon Action. What's happening at the moment is that advocates and Oregon leaders who oppose the $85 billion in across-the-board automatic spending cuts are going to host a press conference. They had a press conference this morning to discuss the impact of these actions on pretty much the entire gamut from education to public safety. And we're going to speak with Ron Williams now, who is at the center of this. This is a kind of, I guess, recap of the morning's press conference. Good morning, Ron. Thanks so much for being with us today. I appreciate you joining us by phone.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, so this is Oregon's the economy already staggering. The governor more or less giving the whole show away to any corporation that comes sniffing around the door. It's like, come on by, you know, no taxes for you. So how are they going to manage to balance this? How is the governor going to explain that we're going to spend $400-something million on a bridge that will only increase congestion when the schools are falling apart?
I mean, that's a great point. I mean, the governor's big plan or his big idea is that by savings in health care, savings in transforming the correction systems will result in savings overall that can be invested in education. But that idea is essentially in conflict with what's happening with the sequestration. Under the sequestration, teachers in the school in Oregon will lose about $10.2 million for primary and secondary education. And that's going to put about 140 teachers out of work. Education for children with disabilities is going to lose about $6.4 million. So there will be about 100 fewer teachers, aides, and staff for education. So education is going to take a big hit. Child care is going to lose access. About 300 folks are going to lose access to care for their children. And so these ideas are in conflict. In terms of the CRC in particular, I mean, it's happening. I mean, it was voted, the Oregon lawmakers voted 45-11 to approve House Bill 2811 that would allow the sale of $450 million in bonds. And at this point, that's going to be matched by the state of Oregon to come up with the $900 million that will then be supplanted by federal money. And so the thing that think about in terms of the CRC that we care about is that, you know, if it's going to happen, we want to make sure that there's some community benefit associated with it. We want to make sure that there are going to be their goals and targets for jobs, particularly for low-income people of color, women, minority businesses. We want to make sure that jobs that are created are living-wage jobs with health care, and we want to make sure that there's clear community benefit associated with that. When the CRC was initially being proposed, there was going to be a fund that would kind of go to the impacted businesses and communities that would kind of offset some of the damage that's going to be done to the communities. And we don't see that in the legislation, and that's a problem. So for us, you know, it doesn't make sense that as, you know, the CRC is moving forward, that we're facing these federal cuts to education that are going to deeply impact families. One of the other impacts that's going to happen is Head Start in Oregon is going to eliminate services for about 1,000 children. We're seeing right here in Portland, Albina Head Start, for example, has notified their folks that they're facing a 5% or $400,000 hit. And that's going to result in you know, lots of kids losing the care that they get, and so that's early childhood education. So education across the board is being impacted.
And we will eventually be paying for all of these horrendous mistakes. This is an inadvertent form of social engineering, which is going to have disastrous results in many observers' opinions. I want to thank you so much for joining us. That's all the time that we have. My guest has been Ron Williams. He's with Oregon Action and taking a look at the sequestration's effects on Oregon's economy in the aftermath of this morning's press conference. Before we touch on any other stories from Cascadia and around the nation. Very, very interesting events coming up this week. The president is off to Israel on the 20th. Joe Biden just made a very conciliatory and appeasing speech to the APAC gathering. And, of course, John Kerry has emerged as a hawk, and is threatening Iran with military action if they pursue nuclear weapons. And we're right in the face of completely ignoring the fact that Israel is a nuclear power that is totally rogue outside all governance. We are so fortunate. We've got Josh Rupner on with us today with the campaign to end occupation. We'll talk as long as we can, and then hopefully if Josh can take the time to record something later, don't forget to check the KBOO website. There will be a longer interview there for you. Good morning, Josh, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, so sequestration has got everybody's wringing their hands and twisting their panties over sequestration. Everyone except, of course, for our number one client state, Israel, or perhaps we're the client state. It's hard to tell these days. Sequestration and Israel, how's that going to work?
Well, as far as is known, the military aid package from the United States to Israel is affected by the sequestration. And when the sequestration deal first came about in 2011, there was a bit of a conversation about whether AIPAC would lobby to try to get that money back if it came to sequestration, or they would let it go, not wanting to single Israel out for special treatment. And initially, AIPAC came out and said, no, we wouldn't be lobbying for adding this money back in if there are across-the-board budget cuts. But it appears now that sequestration has happened and Israel's military aid package has been cut by about $250 million. There were indications in the press that as AIPAC goes up to lobby Capitol Hill today, that they will be lobbying to exempt this money from being deducted from Israel's military aid package.
And meanwhile, of course, Palestinians, the aid, everything that was promised to them, none of that's been forthcoming, and they are still suffering a punitive action on the part of Israel after they went to the United Nations and, of course, virtually recognized the state. In the region, what have you heard as a reaction from people in the region?
Well, I think that, you know, it's pretty much a non-event. I mean, given the mm-hmm. fact that even if Israel gets $250 million cut from its military aid budget, that still means that Israel's getting close to $3 billion, about $2.75 billion worth of weapons from the United States in this fiscal year. And those weapons will do an immense amount of damage to Palestinians who are living under Israel's oppressive rule in the occupied territories.
So Israel isn't particularly concerned. Aside from the money, there's certain symbolic value to a great many of these. It's kind of like watching a kabuki theater. AIPAC's influence. There was just this to move slightly to wrap things up here. Just if we'd like to talk briefly about AIPAC and then talk about it in greater depth later. Influence on John Kerry and, of course, the Secretary of State and this new term. How do you see their influence in light of a new continuing administration?
I think, quite frankly, this is a terrible time for AIPAC. Although AIPAC itself didn't take a position on the nomination of Chuck Hagel to be the Secretary of Defense, it was clear that the Israel lobby was behind the efforts to get him dashed as the Secretary of Defense.
That's all, that's all the time that we have. That's exactly where we'd like to take up the discussion and later, and we will try to get that up on the KBOO website. We're very, very fortunate to have Josh Rubner with us today, albeit briefly. Josh, of course, is with the campaign to end the occupation, one of the most powerful and active groups working on behalf of the Palestinian people here in the United States. This has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, March 5th, 2013. Janet Anderson engineered the show today. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Flashpoints, the Pope jumps ship right before the High Holy Holidays. We'll ask why, and we'll talk to someone who wants to summon him, that is Joseph Ratzinger, to a international court for prosecution. Also, we'll have excerpts from a brand new film, Troubled Waters, a new documentary on the battle to prevent corporate water poachers from diverting and stealing the public source of all life. That would be fresh water. I'm Dennis Bernstein, all this straight ahead in Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. That, by the way, the documentary that we'll be playing excerpts from later about the battle to protect the key source of water in the West, a very powerful documentary. It's actually called Over Troubled Waters. And it's a battle over who's going to control that which particularly the people in the West depend on for survival. Amazing film. Anyway, first, though, we're going to take a look at, what's happening with the ex-pope and why some folks are trying to summon him to international court to stand trial. And joining us to talk about this, again, is Kevin Annette. He's been fighting a government church genocide to get it out, to get the word out. He's done incredible work on that, and he's been focusing on the Pope as well, trying to hold him accountable for all kinds of crimes, among the other things, really covering up, making it possible for this pandemic of child molestation and various criminal acts by priests and bishops goes by the wayside. Kevin Annette, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Thanks for having me, Dennis.
Well, first of all, let's just talk. I'd like to get your analysis and your take on what we have seen unfold since this incredibly unusual and historical decision by the current Pope, Joseph Ratzinger, to resign. A lot has happened. Put it in a little context.
Well, it's kind of a converging of a lot of crises for the Vatican, and it isn't just what you see in the corporate media of problems with the Vatican Bank or this particularly nasty Pope, ordered American bishops to cover up child abuse. It's the whole systemic problem. It's all the crows coming home to roost. It's the fact that not only the Pope,